Welcome to the NFL Players Podcast. I'm Aeneas Williams. I'm joined today by Stephon Morris. I'm excited because, can you say Cigna with me? Not only the resources that are available to legends and current players through Cigna, but also the story of the disappointed expectations, getting counseling, coming into manhood. All of those things are covered with Stephon's story. Let's listen in. Well, I just want to tell you, Stephon, that you've made me feel a lot more wiser when you told me that your dad came to the Southern University on a recruiting trip, and I hosted him while playing.
You hosted him.
Southern, man. I feel like I have to, I'm not older, I'm wiser. How about that?
he told me this story at least twice a year.
Wow.
So when I told him that you was going to be hosting the podcast, like, he was just so overjoyed. Like, tell him a story. Tell him a story that I met him and he hosted me. See if he remembers. So
take me through your NFL experience from leaving Penn State and the brief stint that you had in the National Football League.
Yeah, so absolutely. Pro day at Penn State, talked to, of course, a good amount of teams that led to the waiting period of being drafted or not drafted, talking to actually three teams, including New England during the draft, that I thought I was going to be picked up at mid-round picks or later. That didn't come about. Spoke with, of course, my agent and trying to identify what's the best possible place where I can make the team.
Right.
With that being New England and him knowing Bill, having a good relationship with Mr. Belichick, we end up deciding to go to New England. So I want to say maybe 3-4 days later, I ended up flying out to Foxborough. We had rookie minicamp, did pretty well. Next thing you know was regular minicamp and OTA. So I got to learn behind Aqib Talib at the time, Rashad Dowling, that was in my DB room, as well as Devin McCourty, who I absolutely just love and try to pick his brain every day.
Being around Tom Brady, even though a short period of time, what did you see? What are some traits you saw with Tom that you know goes into why he's had such the career that he's had?
Tom is a pro in all aspects. The way he trained, the way he prepares. Like, Tom is just a pro. I saw that firsthand. I remember my first time coming to New England. Like, he was, as I mentioned, already in the weight room, but he was just prepared. He's prepared and he can adapt too. Belichick likes to change things on the fly in practice. So we could be in team meetings, talk about how we're going, you know, stop this or how we're going to disguise this concept. And 3 minutes later, we get the team practice and maybe Tom is killing us. Boom. Let's try it a different way. But Tom is able to adapt and prepare for anything. So I was very confident going into training camp. I already knew what to expect. I was sort of adapting to the Patriot way and ended up having a really good early part of camp. Messed up my hamstring the first time. I got healthy. My very first game, it was against the Giants. It was a play that I done did maybe 2 million times, covering the punt. Punter shanks it. I got a cutback under the double team, tore my hamstring, and I just knew. It's weird because I knew it was over for me. Like, I knew. It was a picture that my dad sent me 3 weeks ago. He sent me a picture 3 weeks ago, and it was on NFL Network, and he just took a picture of that play and me on the sideline when they showed it. But you can just see it in my face that I knew, like, that was my last play. So I still kept hope, of course. I had to get healthy. That took some time. That played a part mentally and physically. I just could never get over the physical barrel. I think it was more so just, it was mental.
Did you go and attempt to play in the CFL? And when did you decide to call it a career?
Yep, so I originally didn't want to go to the CFL. I fought my agent on this. I still fight my agent on this. Every time we talk, we got a good relationship. I just thought that I was an NFL player. So coming from the NFL and being in, you know, an NFL locker room and performing in practice, you know, that you should be there. I just felt like the CFL was kind of beneath me. So my preparation going to the NFL wasn't the same as my preparation going to the CFL. I knew it was over because I asked them to release me. I just didn't want to play football. I didn't want to be in the CFL. And that was just a part of, I wasn't a man yet. I felt entitled. Going from D1, a big time D1 school, to New England, to the CFL, I felt entitled. So I asked them to release me.
How did you come to terms with the fact that your NFL experience was not going to meet your own expectations, Stephanie?
It took me a while. So growing up, you know, that was my way out of football, as you may know. Playing this game from 6 years old, you have dreams, aspirations. My favorite player at that point in time was Emmitt Smith. I wanted to have a career like Emmitt Smith. But I also watched guys like you and Nez, both Woodsons, Rod and Charles Woodson, Dion, of course. So I wanted to emulate my game after you guys and also achieve the amount of success that you guys have put in as well.
Thank you.
Little did I know that, you know, that 13-year career that I dreamed of and me being financially stable and being able to provide and do everything I done dreamed of at that early age, that it would end in 6 months. So me coming to terms with it, I didn't come to terms until I became a man. Even though I was already 21, 22, 23 years old during that time of my career, I still wasn't a man yet. I still identified myself as a football player. Steph the football player. I wasn't Stephon. I didn't come to terms until I seek help, until I went through, you know, the obstacles of being in a dark zone, a danger zone. So it took me almost 3 years after me being released, 3 years after my first NFL game, to come to terms with the fact that, hey, this is real life. This is what it is. So it took some time.
Now, you said something. You said when you became a man. What do you mean?
So for me, I thought I knew everything. Not that I couldn't be coached or taught. That's not the case at all. But having literally the world on your shoulders, trying to make it for everyone else, trying to be able in a position to financially be in a position to financially make everyone else happy, make sure they don't have to work. It was a lot mentally. And of course, that mental aspect played a part of my physical traits of me being injured. So what I mean by being a man is I was depressed. I went through suicidal thoughts. I was depressed for almost 2 years. I went through suicidal thoughts for 6 months. And every day during those 6 months, I thought about a different way of trying to kill myself, right? So during those 6 months, the thought process is, who's going to attend my funeral? These are things that's coming to my head. Who's going to be at my funeral? Are they going to miss me? Am I going to have a big funeral? Like just those type of thoughts, deep thoughts. So once I was able to say it again.
Were you alone? Did you have anyone to talk
to? I wasn't alone. I was alone, but I wasn't alone. I didn't seek the help. I had help. I have my dad that's my everything. He done raised me since I was an infant. So I had help, but I didn't know how to seek it. So at that point in time, mental health I wouldn't say it wasn't as big. Right. A lot of people didn't come out about it like the guys do now and the Kevin Loves of the world. It wasn't being spoke about. Mm-hmm. So my dad, actually, he's one of the reasons for me seeking help.
Wow.
He's one of the reasons. Yeah. So I remember we had this program with NFL Players Engagement. This is right after, maybe 6 months after I got released from New England. And we're going on this trip, right? We're headed to Cleveland. I remember this day. So I'm not sure what I said or what I did, but my dad was with me. And he said, you okay? Like, you want me to schedule a counselor? At that point in time, I'm like, I'm good. Like, I'm fine. I don't need it. I don't need no shrink. That's for weak people. That's what I said. That was my thought process at that point in time. I'm strong. I guess, you know, I felt like, you know, men wasn't supposed to cry. They had to handle their own issues. They didn't seek anything. I felt like that wasn't being a part of a man. So I ended up seeking help through Troy Vincent. Troy Vincent and my dad are really tight. They talk almost every day. He just saw me just transpire going in a direction that I wasn't, that wasn't needed. And that direction was, I was lashing out, not physically, but more so emotionally. It was times where I could be asleep and I would like wake up just swinging. Like I was really in just like a dark place. Around that time too, my birth mom started coming around. I haven't seen her, I haven't talked to her. And now she just now coming around. So I was just lashing out at so many things I didn't know how to cope. I grew up, I came up on a time where social media was just now starting to be huge, right? So Twitter, Instagram, and people don't know, like the current players, the players that's recently transitioned out the game, we look at, you know, how many likes we have when we're playing versus how many likes we have when we don't, when we're not playing.
Right.
Like you can see those signs where they page go from being open to now becoming private. Social media for me, that was, I was doing things where I knew I was done, but I'm still posting little videos like I'm working out just to get the love from those fans, to get people that I haven't even met, just to get that approval.
Right.
So social media played a huge part for me as far as just my depression. I was able to seek help through Troy. Troy got me in place with my account manager now, S-Signa. Her name is Valerie Featherston. She probably don't remember this conversation, but we met at Georgia Tech. I was on a camp with my football academy, prime example. Took a few kids to Georgia Tech for a camp. So I ended up meeting Valerie through Troy, introduced me, me and her talk for about a good hour and a half about everything, where I come from, what I want to do, what happened with my injury, how was Bill Belichick, like everything. I'm not sure how she kind of felt it, but she asked me how was I doing mentally.
Right.
And I, you know, I told her because I wasn't seeking help at that point in time. But yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm good. You know, because at that point in time, I'm thinking me seeing a counselor or especially in that field, that's just being looked at as weak. I'm not a weak person. So she said, well, just in case you do need it, here's my number. Give me a call. And I'm going to give you the number to the NFL Player Counseling and Assistance. So ended up leaving Georgia Tech. I want to say that was a Sunday. That Monday, I ended up calling the dedicated number, got set up, got situated. And that was my first time seeking help.
You being a man simply meant you humbled yourself and got the help you needed. Is that how you're describing being a man?
I would definitely say so. I would say it improved my communications. I was able to talk to my birth mom. I wasn't lashing out as much. My interpersonal skills got a little bit better. I had the awareness of, you know, just greater self-acceptance and self-esteem, better expression and management of just my emotions in general, right? So I wouldn't say I was relieved right away from my depression and my suicidal thoughts. Of course, it took some time, but me just seeking help or, you know, constantly visiting my counselor at that point in time, it helped me tremendously. It made me a better father. I had my son my freshman year of college. And I mean, you play college football, you don't have that relationship.
Right.
You just his dad. You're not the father. Right. So I really think everything do happen for a reason. Me getting injured happened for a reason. Me being a better dad, me being a better friend. I feel as though if I was still playing, the relationship I have with my son now and my mom passed away, but me bridging that gap, us bridging that gap, it would never happen. Never.
Stephon, one of the things, you have more than just your expectations of having a long career. Your birth mom, you mentioned that. How does she find you? You're in the middle of this transition that you weren't expecting, and your birth mom shows up?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it wasn't hard. I have siblings I kept in contact with, not as much, but I kept in contact with. They know how I felt. Don't give her my number. That's just where I was. She wasn't there. She wasn't with me when I was practicing. She wasn't with me when I graduated. There's no point in her showing up now. And in retrospect, I was really hurting because I wanted her to be at every event. I wanted her to, you know, be in my son's life at that point in time. Like, I needed her. Right. I just didn't know how to tell her that. Yeah, she came back into my life the week I got released.
Really?
The week I got released, she reached out to me, just asked me how I was doing. She was proud of me. And I think I gave a pretty good answer. I didn't lash out yet, but I felt myself, as I mentioned, just hitting, transpiring downward when she reached out to me on her birthday. So she called me on her birthday, and she, I don't know why she said this, but she said, "Son, I'm a little disappointed in you." I said, "Why?" "Because you didn't get me nothing for my birthday, right?" Wow. So I'm thinking at this point in time, because I, you know, you think I have money, I supposed to get you something after, you know, I haven't seen you in what, 20 years sparingly. So I end up texting her back and I said, "Look up the word disappointment, and that's what you are in my life." And that conversation on kind of just led me down a path where I was just fighting demons.
Wow.
As I mentioned earlier, like, I'm asleep, I'm waking up, I'm seeing like things that I'm afraid of, like that, and I'm fighting them in my sleep. I wake up, I'm yelling, right? So
your story is typically just the opposite of the conversations I have with most legends. It's usually their fathers that were out their life for a long time. You're one of the first that I've experienced to have this experience with your mother. That's pretty interesting, right?
It is. I mean, I grew up, I always thought I didn't need her. So my dad had my stepmom, who I call my mom. That's right. My mom.
Right.
So whenever my birth mom did come around, I just didn't know her. I didn't want to accept her. It's a weird situation. I'm going to tell you how God worked. So I'm just going to move forward a little bit, but we ended up somewhat bridging our gap. I ended up coming to Atlanta. This is Mother's Day. So she come down for Mother's Day and she just opened up to me. The reason why she wasn't there, why she had my siblings, this, everything, right? So she's like crying to me. And at that point in time, I'm still seeking my counseling sessions for depression and anxiety. But I didn't know that her opening up to me like that would also be, you know, counseling in itself, right? So we ended up hugging it out, both of us in tears. I just felt so relieved. 6 months later, she passes away from a brain aneurysm.
What?
So the doctor said her aneurysm was so big that she should have passed away 3 years ago.
Man, I don't even want to transition because this is so. So before I transition to Cigna, your experience there, it sounded like you had a need for mom that you have been suppressing or were not even aware of.
Yes, sir. I would say so.
Man, talk to me about Cigna. Cigna work and life resources.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, Valerie introduced me to the program. I got connected. I sought help. So my first session, actually seeking a counselor, I was quiet for 45 minutes. I didn't say nothing. My first session. So I was just thinking, like, what the hell am I doing here?
Right.
Like, I don't need this. I'm fine. My second session, I was quiet for 45 minutes. I remember this vividly. She ended up writing on this board, "Why are you so angry?" And I came back to that third session. She just said, "You don't have to talk. I just want you to write, you know, three reasons why you're angry." So I wrote down, I said, I'm angry because I'm here. I'm angry because you don't understand. And I'm angry because I let everyone down. She mentioned, she said, why you think I don't understand? I said, because you didn't play this game. I want to talk to someone who played, who understand where I'm coming from, who had the same dreams, aspirations of me, who know exactly the shoes that I'm in. I said, there's no possible way that you can help me if you didn't walk through my shoes.
Who did you think you had let down? You said, you told her, I let so many people down. Who did you think you had let down?
Yeah, just my family in general. I talked about, you know, just having these dreams, like I mentioned, watching you, you know, coming up, playing with you on Madden, hearing my dad talk about, you know, I was on a recruiting trip with Aeneas, ironically, but having these dreams and aspirations and goals of getting my dad a house, paying off his car, not seeing him work again, helping my great grandmother, helping my siblings. I just felt like I let everyone down, even my son. It was times where my son, for a long time, would be like, so when's your next game? And I didn't know how to tell him that I don't play no more.
And Stephon, being in the counseling sessions and what, the first two sessions, 45 minutes of silence, what made you come back?
There was no judgment. I felt comfortable. I felt comfortable sitting in silence. No judgment necessary, no judgment passed. She allowed me to be myself within those 45 minutes. She didn't force me to speak, force me to do lessons that she had written down or pre-planned. She just sat there with me. So that next session was very, very helpful, of course. We discussed that, but it was needed. The way her sessions went, she just allowed me to be me. She let me be quiet when I wanted to be quiet. I cried in the sessions, didn't think I would. I probably cried every session other than the first two. Like, she was just amazing and getting me to open up and see things and allow me to see the world just differently. And she told me that, you know, you are more than what you're giving yourself of. You are more than just a football player. It's cliche, but it's true. You are more than a football player. I told her at that point in time, I said, I can't even identify who Stephon is as a football player when I'm introducing myself and who Stephon is as a man in general.
Right.
Every conversation that I have at that point in time was, hey, my name is Steph Morris. I play for New England Patriots. Or, hey, my name is Steph Morris. I went to Penn State. I'm a former NFL player. That's all I could give you. So she allowed me to open up and identify exactly who Stephon Morris is and not just Steph, the football player. So going back to the Cigna Work-Life Resources Program, I utilized that. That's before I even got to Cigna. So little did I know, Valerie would then become my account manager for the program. I was able to bridge that gap from being a former player and seeing what it looked like versus now being in a corporate setting and them trying to identify how do, you know, we drive utilization or how do we connect with these players.
I'm sorry, Stephon, what made you finally make the call?
Valerie.
Her words, or did she follow back up with you again?
She didn't follow up. She was just genuine. She didn't know me. I mean, it was an introduction. But she spoke to me as if she cared. And my dad didn't make me, because he mentioned about counseling too. His words, I mean, I shrugged it off, but speaking to Valerie, like, right. I owe her a thank you to this day. Like, she made me go seek help.
So if you got a chance to talk to all the NFL rookies, including the draft picks, you were undrafted, but include all the rookies, what would be your elevator speech to them?
That you are not alone. I would start off with that. You are not alone. And what I mean by that is we as humans have an expiration date, right?
Right.
We don't know when it's going to come. We also have an expiration date in football. That sometimes if we're lucky enough, we can go out on our own terms, but majority of the time, that's not the case. So you're not alone in the process of when that time comes, don't be afraid to, you know, seek help, open up, be vulnerable.
So Cigna helped you so much in going through that counseling. You decided to make it a career. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Troy Vinson is a huge mentor of mine.
Yeah.
At first he wanted to see me, you know, put some work in. So I was going on job interviews and everything. And just your typical sales position, door to door. And every conversation that I had at that point in time was, so what experiences do you have? Tell me about yourself. And I kept giving them the same answer, which I would get angry, which helped me with my counseling sessions was, I told you, I have no other experiences, but no other jobs. This is me. New England, Penn State. And I would just get so frustrated because I just felt like I'm not going to never get a job. Mm. But at that point in time, he just wanted to see me get off my butt and just work towards something. I didn't even know he had, you know, Cigna implant. I didn't know my conversation with Valerie a year later would lead to her being my manager. Yep. So coming to Cigna, it's been 5 years now, a little over five. It's been amazing. It's been awesome. It allows me to connect with not only current players, but former players, just letting them know they're not alone. I'm here. I've been able to participate in events like the Player Care Foundation, Legend Communities event, and run into, you know, just your John Doe and open up to him about, you know, what I went through.
All right. I ask you, Stephon, what would you say to rookies? Now I'm asking you, what would you say to the high school freshmen?
Awesome. So I actually have a program called Prime Example that my dad started back in 08. Training, mentoring, just high school kids as well as youth kids. I actually brought that program out to Atlanta. I started about 2 years ago. Kids get excited when they see a former player or someone that, you know, they play with on Madden or someone that they can Google.
Right.
But I identify myself, hey, that's not me. Mm. Yes, I play this game, but I have a job. I have a day-to-day job, which is okay. I'm in a corporate office. I'm in a cube. I went from seeing my name tag on a locker to my name tag on a cube. That's okay. But I always tell my middle school and high school kids, I want you to find something you enjoy outside of football. So the reason why I think guys transition is a little bumpy is because we don't know. We don't know what we like. We've been playing this game and we've been utilizing this game for, you know, financial reasons and just to make it. We can't identify if we like to, you know, maybe want to be a chef or be a lawyer. That's not the things that I was brought up on or raised. So talking to my younger kids, I have them, you know, before they even start the program, what you want to be? You get the same answer. I want to go to the league. I want to go to the league. I want to go to Alabama. You may get one that may say, I want to be an engineer after I'm done playing. Right? Then I have my talk with them. I bring out certain guys that I don't play with, male or females, that I see doing great things in the community. And it may be a lawyer or it may be a counselor. It may be a teacher. Come out, talk to the kids. Let them know what you do, why you love it, why you like it. Then I have my kids come to me the next day or the next session. What do you want to be? Write it down. Tell me why. I want to go to the league. I want to be a doctor. Why you want to be a doctor? Because I want to help people. That's the typical answer. Or, you know, or I want to be a lawyer because I saw my brother or sister, you know, get 10, 15 years and they didn't have a good lawyer. So how are you going to work towards those steps? How are you going to do it? So they don't even know that this lesson I'm giving them is helping them identify the degree that they may want to obtain.
Right.
So that's how I talk to my kids.
Is there any programs, anything available through Cigna that legends that you're noticing not taking advantage of that they should?
Anything? That's the one we're talking about now. Work-life resources program. That's the point. We want to drive utilization. And it's not just for legends, but it's also for everyone, right? So you got your current players, you got your legends, and you got, you know, your household members. What I mean by household members, so your wife can utilize or your daughter can utilize this, you know, this program as well, if they're, you know, struggling with anything.
How can they find out about work-life resources?
They can go to the Legends Community app, or they can call our dedicated Cigna number, dedicated work-life resources number. So it's out there. It's also mailings that's generated. I'm not sure when, maybe quarterly, about the work-life resources program, but this program has been helpful and it's been out here for a while.
It wasn't just what you went through, it's the resilience and you walking through it. God gives us the grace to do it, but we have to put in the work. And you did it and are doing it. Thank you so much for being on the NFL Players Podcast, man. The best is yet to come.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you.
To provide feedback or request a topic for discussion, email us at nfllegends@nfl.com.